Welcome to PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. I'm your host, Mike Bongiorno. I'm here today with my good friend, my confidant, my scrappy-doo.
God, no.
Mr. Vin Forte.
Oh, puppy power.
Puppy power.
Oh, what? He sucks.
Okay, so we'll get into it. I'm going to defend Scrappy.
Go ahead, try.
I will. Actually, my defense is that Flim Flam is here to be worse, which makes him look better.
Yeah.
So you know what we're talking about because you clicked on the link, but we're talking about the 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo from 1985. Over the history of Scooby-Doo, there were many, many variations. Spinoffs, the original Scooby-Doo from is it the 60s or 70s?
Yeah, oh yeah. Late 60s.
And then there was Scooby-Doo, what do you call it? The Scooby-Doo movies where, they would meet Sandy Duncan and various other celebrities.
Yeah, what are the Globetrotters?
Yeah, that's a good one. That's an awesome one, actually. Batman's a really good one, too, because it's Adam West. And then they did a bunch of, they brought Scrappy in at one point, who's good Scooby's dude. Nephew, who's a little puppy, and he's brave, and many people dislike him. And there were various other members in the Scooby-Doo family. And anyway, there was a bunch of other spinoffs. Scooby's Laugh Olympics, which was a little bit like Wacky Races, but it was all of Hanna-Barbera together. Tons of stuff. Anyway, when we get to 1985, this is, I think, the first spinoff that they actually had an idea. They actually had a premise beyond, let's just do something different, or let's just add a new a dog character, or let's bring in Sandy Duncan. This is a genuine premise, which is, for those of you who don't remember Scooby-Doo, and by the way, Pop Culture Man Children, we've done an episode of Scooby-Doo before. We did an episode way back in the beginning just on all of Scooby-Doo. But the general premise of Scooby-Doo was always that despite it having, spooky vibes and, we associating Scooby-Doo with ghosts and goblins and vampires and werewolves and stuff. It was always a simple real estate scam.
Yeah.
It was always, the old farmer wants to scare people off his land or whatever. And it was always a classic, you pull the mask off and, oh, it's really so-and-so.
Oh, it's Old Man Jenkins.
Yeah. And then he says, I would have got away with it if it wasn't a few meddling kids.
You fucking kids.
You fucking kids. But 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo is the first that does the idea of what if it's just real ghosts, which they've done since this.
Yeah.
They've done it a bunch of times since this, including the second live action movie, Monsters Unleashed, right? I think it's real ghosts.
Yeah.
So this was actually your idea, Vin, and I jumped all over because I do love me some Scooby-Doo. What's your relationship to the 13 Ghosts of Scooby?
Oh, I loved it. I remember when Cartoon Network in the 90s would play Scooby-Doo nonstop.
Yeah.
And then they would just mix them all up. They would play What's New Scooby-Doo? They would play Where Are You, Where Are You, Scooby-Doo? Or whatever the first one was. Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? They would play A Pup Named Scooby-Doo an awful lot.
Which is honestly my favorite. We got to do an episode of that eventually.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Has a lot of DNA in common with this one, too.
Yeah, and then, this one would, because it's only 13 episodes, they would kind of just, sprinkle it in every once in a while.
Yeah.
And it would be like, well, hold on, what's this? Where are Fred and Velma?
Yeah.
Why is Shaggy wearing a red shirt?
Yes.
Why is Vincent Price their, mentor and confidant?
Yeah.
Who the fuck is Flim Flam?
Who the fuck is Flim Flam?
It just really stood out. I like when this is definitely of that era of cartoon spinoffs where it's like, how can we make it different?
Yeah.
We're just going to give, Shaggy's got a green shirt. We're going to give him a red shirt.
It's amazing how much that small visual change is so arresting.
Yeah.
Because that green shirt is so iconic. Just giving him a red shirt feels like, whoa. Like,
whoa, what's going on here?
Guys, let's go home. Guys, it's an early Friday. We got it.
And maybe this is a hot take. And I don't think the red van they have in the show has a name. It's less iconic than the Mystery Mobile, but it's way fucking cooler.
Oh, it's awesome. It's like the
A-Team's van.
Yeah. So it's red and it's also like a roving command center. There's like a computer inside.
Yeah, there's like they have like a fucking like specter detector.
Yeah, which is like a PKE meter, really.
Yeah.
This comes out a year after the film Ghostbusters, but a year before the real Ghostbusters cartoon. But I did find myself wondering if any of this was inspired a little bit by the success of the Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, I think it had.
Yeah. Because it has very, it's called The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, but in fact, we could argue some of these things are not ghosts, right? I mean, there's a straight up vampire. That's not a ghost. No. I know this is a lot. If you don't know anything about the show, you're kind of going, what? What did they say? Vincent Price? Yeah, Vincent Price.
Yeah.
Playing himself. he's basically playing himself, right? Because he's voicing it. His character is named Vincent. It's Vincent Van Gool.
Yeah.
Get it? And it's drawn to look exactly like Vincent Price. He's playing Vincent Price.
Yeah. And like, we're not going to go through every single episode. We're just going to like go through, we're going to bounce around and just talk about like the highlights and like and whatever. Mm-hmm. But we should get into like the way it starts. So basically in the first episode, Daphne and Shaggy, who, was it just me or is it totally played off that they're like lovers or like a couple?
You know, it's so funny that that's the first
thing. They're doing a lot more hugging.
When I first saw, so I had a real deep Scooby-Doo phase when I was like 12, 13. And when I first saw this, again, just like you, it was just some random, you know, 2 a.m. or 2 p.m. on a Cartoon Network. And I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
If you had asked me 2 weeks ago before I rewatched it all, are they boyfriend and girlfriend in this? I would have told you yes.
Mm.
But I don't know if I've made that up or not. They could just be friends. It is weird that it's just it's weird, right? Because
it's just them. It's like they did some weird focus test where they're like, nobody likes you two. Like, get out of here.
But it makes sense to have Velma, right? Like, okay, Shaggy is probably the star after Scooby, right? He's the second coward. He's the funny one. He's Casey Kasem, right? Don't make me go into an upbeat song after these goddamn obituaries. We're going to bring the team down to just two of the originals besides Scooby. You think, okay, you need like the real detective mind with Velma, mm-hmm. but they bring in Daphne, who, you know, no disrespect to you Daphne heads out there. She was always underutilized, really, up until A Pup Named Scooby-Doo hit on the idea that she was kind of like a spoiled rich girl and kind of a valley girl and kind of had a bad attitude. She was always just kind of there. And so was Fred. Fred's easy to cut.
Oh, yeah.
Again, sorry to you Fred heads. But he's like, if you want to get rid of some of the central crew, it's like, yeah, get rid of Fred. But to me, it's a really crazy thing to keep Daphne instead of Velma. But Daphne's kind of awesome in this.
Oh, yeah. But do you think it's literally as simple as just like, Daphne's like the hot girl, so we're going to keep her.
We need a hot girl, even though this is a cartoon. I think you need, maybe what they felt like they needed was they need a straight person. But they didn't want it to be Fred because then it's two guys. It's a total sausage party. So maybe make it Daphne. Because Daphne also, this is made in 1985, right? So Daphne has much more of a revamp than Shaggy. Shaggy has, as we said, the devastating red shirt. Devastating.
But Daphne's got a whole new like hairstyle and outfit.
It's giving April O'Neil.
It is. It really is.
She's got like her hair's still red, but it's like it's very like 80s, and she's got like jumpers and stuff. And this show is very globetrotting.
Yes, that's what I like about it, because if you listen, I love the original Scooby-Doo as much as anyone, but it is a formula.
Yes.
It's they're going to go they're in the van breaks down, they're going to go to a small town, then they're either going to like it's a fucking haunted carnival or house or farm or something. This one, it's like, oh, where are they going to go next? Like, there's a whole episode, and we're going to, I guess this is a good time to segue into how, like, weirdly, like, meta a lot of the jokes are in this show.
Which is from 1985,
But first of all, it's like very, like, oh, what are they going to get into today? And just to put a pin in that point, or put a fine point on that point, whatever the fuck, it there's a whole episode here where they go into like the funny page.
Oh my god, dude! Like for real, like this is like proto Deadpool shit in 1985.
In
like
the
they're
first
playing
episode,
yeah,
they do a whole thing where it just like very meta, like cuts to like a breaking news thing,
yeah,
about like censorship.
Yeah,
and then
the,
like there's
the
a
censor's
whole,
name
like,
is Miss Cut It Out.
Yeah, and there's like a whole 2 minute bit where like Shaggy's like wondering, and you're wondering the whole time, was wondering like, is this in reaction to something that was going on like politically, like with TV at the time, that like they were trying to say something to the censors, or like got a note that they shouldn't do something, and this is their like reaction that they slipped in?
You know, I'm not.
Ronald Reagan shows up.
Yes, he does. Yeah, episodes, yeah.
Which,
yeah, I find myself wondering.
To put a pin, just to put a pin in this, and we'll get to this, yeah, one later. That episode that Reagan shows up is a whole episode where Scooby-Doo gets so scared, he's like, fuck this. I'm going home to my parents. And the whole episode is about like him just not wanting to participate and going home to his parents' house.
Yeah. I swear to God, this show does something. It does things. I mean, more than any other Scooby-Doo, I think, up to this point, it has, I mean, it's obviously one-offs, but it has a continuity that keeps going. It's not a strong continuity, but it does have a continuity. Because, like, so, as Vince said, it's only 13 episodes, and it's called The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. So I think anybody would go, oh, okay, it was like a miniseries. Actually not. They wanted it to keep going, and I think eventually they were just going to, like, still say, oh, the 13 ghosts, but sometimes it's unclear. Like, at one point later on in the show, they open up we haven't even talked about the chest, but at some point later on in the show, they open up the chest, and a bunch of ghosts come out that we have not seen. And it's like, oh, yeah, when did we catch those guys? Let's talk about the demon chest, all right? Because it's really the MacGuffin of this whole show, yeah, and it's a
pretty cool design.
Well,
let's go back, because we were talking about the first. Let's at least set the table on the first episode, even if we're going to jump around.
Well, actually, wait, let me interrupt you, interrupting you. I wanted to go back. You were saying, what do you think was in the water at this time that this got to be so meta? I don't know, you know, from a point of view of like out there, but I do think the issue is this producer. So the producer of this show, what's his name? Excuse me, folks. I will find it. So the producer of the show, or he's one of the producers of the show, is a guy go by the name of Tom Ruger. He's the associate producer. And he becomes, I think, the showrunner for a pup named Scooby-Doo, which is, remember, very, very meta. Yeah. Like, to the point where, like, in the theme song, it says, you can help us solve the crime. And at the end of every episode, like, Freddy will turn to the screen and be like, what did you guys think? Is there a clue? But not in like a Dora the Explorer way, more in like a fun meta way.
Yeah.
Kind of like in a Who Shot Mr. Burns, what do you think?
Yeah.
A lot of people say it's this guy, Tom Ruger, it's his influence that he had this mindset of like, no, let's be experimental, let's be funny, let's be meta. I mean, there's a point later on where they're flipping through a TV and you see the original Scooby-Doo show.
Yeah.
Which is like, again, that shit's so common now, but for 1985, you did not see that stuff.
Yeah, it's because I don't remember all that stuff from originally watching it. Just watching it now all at once, that it really like caught my attention.
Yeah. But you were saying, let's set up the first episode.
Yeah, so basically it starts out with Scooby, Scrappy, Shaggy, and Daphne going on a Hawaiian vacation in their plane, like you do. And
right, who pays for this stuff?
I don't know. Mystery machine.
It's the mystery money. Flying machine.
The mystery. They taped a little flying on it. And Shaggy's like, oh yeah, we're going. And Daphne's like, oh well, what are we doing? Like, it's we're in like the Himalayas right now. Like, we're not in Hawaii. He's like, what are you talking about? And it's like, dude, there's fucking snow all over. What do you mean? What is she talking about? But he was very oblivious. Yeah.
But he's also the one flying. Oddly.
Yeah, yeah, I don't like him flying.
Yeah. They go to the Himalayas by mistake.
And then while that's going on, there's like this small like town where Flim Flam is introduced.
Oh boy.
And he, as his name would imply, is selling like Grandpa Simpson's love tonic or whatever the fuck. And it's the joy juice.
Joy juice, which makes me think of when they say joy juice in Boogie Nights. Burt Reynolds exactly. saying joy juice.
I got Flim Flam's joy juice. So he's trying to sell that.
He's a little bit based on the Music Man from because he, even when we first meet him, he's talking like the Music Man, like, hey, you, there's a, and that starts with an M, and that means this. Like, it's very music. He's a con artist child, but he's also like a street rat, kind of like, who owns this child? Nobody.
Yeah, he's really trying to sell the town of Monorail.
So
then they come, so they're like, oh my God, we're going to crash. And they go flying. They lose one of their engines, and Shaggy doesn't panic and just goes, oh, well, we've got another engine. Okay. Then the other engine gets knocked out. They start flying towards the town. They eject the emergency, giant rubber duck, which Flim Flam, as he's about to get caught by the town, latches onto to escape.
Yeah.
And then they basically crash in front of Vincent Van Gogh's castle.
Right.
And they're like, oh, here we go. Let's see what's going on in here. Well, first off, they go to, there's a trial scene where I wasn't expecting, where there's a quick trial scene where the townspeople are like, you got to get the fuck, we hate you now because you crashed into our town.
You got to get out of here before nightfall.
Before nightfall. So then they go into Vincent Van Gogh's castle because they go look for their plane and they're like, wait a minute, where's the plane? And it's in the castle for some reason.
Right.
So then they go in the castle and this is fucking ridiculous. Then, like, there's these two other, how do I even explain the two other ghouls?
They're, to me, more than Flim Flam, to me, they're the worst part of the show. There are two ghosts that are named Bogle and Weird. And Bogle and Weird are, they're like one fatso short of being the uncles from Casper. They're like kind of
pretty much.
They're low level, like shitty, dumb. They're the Rosencrantz. It's never quite clear what they want. In the first episode,
they want to open the chest.
Right.
The demon chest that holds the 13 ghosts.
Who are like the most scary, powerful ghosts in all of time. Which the townspeople in this Himalayan town, they all caught these ghosts and put them in the demon chest. And they feel like if they open the demon chest, they could be like, I don't, he says like full-fledged ghosts. Yeah, like I get like, it's like they want acceptance or whatever.
Yeah. So, and they're, basically how it happens is Shaggy and Scooby go into one of the rooms and they're there dressed like fucking Monty Brown. And they're doing like, let's make a deal kind of stuff.
Let's make a squeal.
Yes, let's make a squeal.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, well, here, you can get, behind this curtain is your plane. And it's like, oh, go for the plane, Scoob, go for the plane. And then like behind the other door is like, oh, or you could go for what's in the box. And then they're like, we should take the plane. Yeah, get the plane. And then in another like great little joke, they're like, they're so dead set on getting the plane. And he's like, yeah, let's go for the plane. We'll take the box.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, what?
Yeah. Yeah.
When Scooby opens the box and then all hell breaks loose, the townspeople turn into like werewolves and monsters.
Right. Well, the townspeople, I don't, oh no, why are they, someone put a curse on them, but I'm trying to remember how that's related to the ghosts at all.
I think I think it's because they didn't want people finding and opening the chest. So it was like, oh, this town's full of monsters.
Okay. Yeah. It's pretty cool scene when they turn into, because I think somebody bites or something, Daphne, and Daphne turns into a werewolf. And then Flim Flam's joy juice squirts her right in the face with it, gives her a nice facial with it. And then she turns back into a person. But I just want to talk a little bit about the box we just talked about. So the demon chest, which is like really the icon of the show, it's the first thing you see in the opening. It's, imagine like the kind of chest like, you know, a pirate treasure chest. It's got the rounded top. But it's got like the, would you say bust? It's got like a sculpture of like a demon head. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you open it like crazy, like, you know, it's depicted a couple different ways. Sometimes it's all black. Sometimes it's like red power. Basically, they open it up and all hell breaks loose. And the person who lives in this castle, Vincent Van Gogh, who is played by Vincent Van Gogh and looks just – not Vincent Van Gogh. Excuse me. They dug him up. No, he's played by Vincent Price, and who, of course, again, you know, a lot of young kids listen to PCMC. He's kind of perfect casting because he did horror movies, and you know, he narrates thriller, so he had a big connection to horror. There's a movie by a famous horror director named William Castle, which is The 13 Ghosts, which this is the title comes from that. He's not in that movie, but he's in other William Castle movies. William Castle was famous for, like, he put, like, buzzer underneath the chair. Like, a lot of gimmicks. He was a gimmicky
kind of film. Well, yeah, that's like the Tingler.
Yes, exactly. That's William Castle. So Vincent Van Gogh is kind of like, he's a sorcerer or a warlock. He has magic, but also, like, he's very gadget-oriented, even though he has a lot of magic. He has a crystal ball, which they use basically like a iPhone in this, and he says, because you guys, this is the whole premise of the show, because you guys let the ghosts out, it's your job to scour the world, all over the world, and find the 13 ghosts and put them back in the box and save the world.
Yeah, it's really like Scooby-Doo meets Dragon Ball.
See, I've never watched Dragon Ball, sadly.
See, that's got to be an episode.
You're the second person in a few months to say that to me on the show. Let's go back to Bogle and Weird. You're not as hard on them as me. You like the Bogle and Weird?
They're not as intrusive as I was expecting them to be from the pilot.
They skip a few episodes in the beginning.
I was just about to say, like, they do skip a few episodes. They come back, but they do get into a groove of like they kind of become the lackeys for whatever the big
yes very bulk and skull
means. Yes,
yeah, like whoever the whatever which of the 13 ghosts this episode is going to be about, they are like working for them.
I
guess let's talk about some of the some of the ghosts, because I gotta say that this is really good animation, and I think the designs are really good. They really, again, this is before the real Ghostbusters, but it reminds me of the real Ghostbusters. So episode 2, which is called Scoobra Cadubra, has Maldor the Malevolent, who's a very cool looking guy. He's like, you can't see his face, it's like black, kind of like Orko from Master Universe. He's got yellow eyes, he's got gray hair, but he's got like two giant white like horns and like a purple shirt and like a robe, and he has like long pale fingers, and his thing is he wants to get this MacGuffin called, what is it called,
the wand,
the something wand,
like a gold wand, but it looks like a spoon.
Oh, the wonder wand of Zagraz. Yeah, this is in some like weird, like, it's an enchanted land that, like, some princess was the queen of, or what? No. Somebody was the queen of or princess of whatever, and he took over their enchanted forest and made it spooky and evil and put her to sleep like Sleeping Beauty.
Yeah, and then basically Daphne gets put under the spell, and, like, then she's asleep for the back half of the episode.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo gets the wand and then starts turning, like, it's cool when, like, everything turns, like, the trees turn evil, but then Scooby shoots the wand at them, and then they just become like regular ass.
There's a ton of magic in this. There's like good magical creatures and bad magical creatures. One of the cool things about this, I mean, it's stupid, but also I like it, is all right. So the overall world of Scooby-Doo has always been like never clear on geography. Like you can always, like in the original show, you could kind of always drive anywhere.
Yeah.
And it was never clear like time periods. Like you'd be in like a town, and it's like, okay, this is the 60s. But then, like, you'd go to a castle and it's like, are we in the, like, what century is this?
1600s?
Like, yeah. And that's happens very much in this as well. Because it's kind of like.
Oh, yeah. Even by episode 3, it's like, so wait, what? I was very confused by episode 3. And I'll be honest, I could have just rewound to the beginning of the episode and maybe they told you. But were you as confused as me by the fact that, like, it was like an Arabian Nights themed episode?
Yes.
But everyone spoke French?
Well, I'm not the smartest or sharpest knife in the drawer, but I have seen Casablanca a lot. And from Casablanca, okay, I do know that at some point the French were in Morocco. Either they colonized it or something. Again, I'm very dumb. I have a public school education. But yes, they do. A lot of them do have French accents, but I know it from Casablanca. Yeah, but that's cool too. Like, they're in Morocco. Like it truly is.
Like, very quickly, it was like, oh, we're going global.
Yeah.
Whereas, then, like, you know, yeah, speaking of exotic look at, were you as shocked as me to learn, and this is in like the last or second to last episode, that fucking Deauville exists?
Yes. Let's tell the folks at home what Deauville is.
It is exactly what you think it is. It is where Scooby-Doo lives, and his parents, and like there's animal people, and like his parents are there.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's Deauville, baby. Like, it's
kind of stupid. Well, that's an episode that's kind of based, that's an episode later on that's kind of based on Something Wicked This Way Come, the Ray Bradbury story.
Yeah.
Where like a circus comes to Deauville, and the circus, the sort of circus master, in the Ray Bradbury story, I think he's the devil, but in this, he's like a
professor, whatever.
Yeah, he's one of the ghosts, though. And the music, the circus music, hypnotizes everyone into like wanting to stay there. And everyone there working there are monsters, but you don't see them as monsters when you're under his spell. And then Flim Flam wants to run away and join the circus. Flim Flam,
just let him.
Flim Flam, he's very annoying. I get it. He's like the child empowerment character, you know.
He tries,
like,
his best.
Yeah, he's very like 80s kid, you know, very Alex P. Keaton. He's smart, he's cunning, he doesn't have parents.
Very short round.
He wears like a yellow like tracksuit, I guess.
Yeah, like a yellow hoodie outfit.
And like he always has like, he has like Mary Poppins pockets. Like he's often the one holding the demon chest, but it's just in his pocket. And he could take all sorts of nonsense out of his pockets.
He's always got gadget. Like he definitely, like, you talk about MacGuffins and stuff. Like is it just me, or like there were several episodes where you're like, oh, how are they gonna get out of this? And then Flim Flam shows up and he's like, I got this thing. And it's like, well, wait a minute. When did you get
right?
That?
And he always has like a business. He's like, ah, well, let me tell you about Flim Flam's soda shop or whatever. Like, yeah. And it's always some. He also always has the costumes. A big thing in this show.
Oh, musical numbers with the costume?
Well, putting on costumes to fool whoever is menacing you.
Oh, yes.
Like, oh, like at one point later on there, there's a very cool episode where there are zombies, like very cool looking zombies in a cemetery. And they all dress up like, what do they dress up like? Like it's like a tourist thing. And they're like, oh, get on the bus. You're gonna take a trip around the city. Yeah. And then they all send, and of course the zombie's like, oh, great, thank you.
Oh, great.
Because you have to fall for it because it's a silly cartoon. Like, there's a lot of that. Like, even in the first episode, when they go to the judge, they pull some, like, all of a sudden Flim Flam and Scrappy are both in suits.
They're both lawyers.
Yeah. And then the judge is like, this is quite irregular. Because, of course, you always fall for it.
Yeah, and then even in, like, the second episode, they do, like, they're being trapped and they get out of it by pretending it's New Year's Eve.
Right, and they're like, oh, okay. Yeah, the stupid French concierge is like, oh, okay. And then they look and they see the calendar says, like, March 2nd. And he's like, oh!
Yeah, that's what I like. They'll do a musical number and there'll be a bouncing ball. And then Scooby-Doo's, like, looking at the ball bouncing on the words. Like, this show is not afraid to do, like,
meta shit.
Really,
that's crazy meta
comedy.
Shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
To do a weird sing-along out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah, they see me and my shadow at one point.
Like, yes. Yes, they do. Well, that's a cool monster. There's the shadow monster.
Yeah.
Which is like, I think, a Doctor Who episode as well. Like, he could come out of anybody's shadow and then start moving. The shadow demon. They also sometimes call these people demons. Oh, what about, talk about a baddie. What about Queen Morbidia from, ooh, I think she's episode,
isn't one of the later episodes.
No, I think, where is Queen Morbidia? She is in episode 3. No, she's in episode 3. Where,
oh, I'm
she?
Thinking of the one where the like, thinking, Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yes.
One.
No, I'm talking about this one.
Oh, yes.
This baddie right here.
That buxom baddie, yeah.
She, imagine like Elvira with the boobs, but like a red outfit and like a red cape and big black hair with like one white streak. She's a baddie. You know what I mean? She's the hot goth girlfriend you all want.
Yeah.
What the hell was her deal? She was, what did she want?
Well, that's the thing. They had to watch 13 episodes. Some of them do, like, they do tend to blend together. Like,
right. Cause they all want to either use the chest for something or open the chest and let the rest out. Sometimes they have different motives. Like there's one that's just a beautiful woman and she's like a succubus. And
yeah, that was a really fun episode where she seduces Vincent Van Gogh.
Yes. Yes. And
to get married
the way she drains you. Sorry to use the word drain. Is she kisses you?
That's their word, not yours. Yes. You don't have to apologize for shit. There's whole parts of that episode where she's like, "Finally, once I drain Vincent Van Cool," I'm like, "Whoa, hold on, hold up."
yeah, and she just looks like a lady. She's very. If anything, she looks like maybe a little bit like Jessica Rabbit because she's got the hair over one eye. She's supposed to be beautiful. And that's a weird one where they are, I forget where they are, but they're at a, like the Warlock of the Year awards. So there's all these witches and warlocks, and Vincent Van Gogh is winning, Warlock of the Year.
He's getting Warlock of the Year, but then he's also like giving out a prize.
Right. And she's his ex-girlfriend or something.
Yeah.
But she wants to drain him and he, and all you need to do, all she needs to do is kiss you. And when she kisses you, she like sucks the power out of you.
Yeah.
And her hair kind of turns into like Medusa snake hair, but only for that moment.
Right. But, she's basically Poison Ivy.
Yes. Yes, exactly. She's exactly like Poison Ivy. And she convinces Vincent, at one point Vincent Van Gogh's like, I'm going to ask her to marry me. So there's a whole like wedding, which is like very sweet kid show stuff. Cause all you need to do is kiss to kill him. Like, you don't need a wedding to just kiss him. But she's like, oh, we'll do a wedding. And then when they say I do, I'll suck his soul out. And then maybe the weirdest thing that ever happened in Scooby-Doo history happens. As a way of disrupting the wedding, Daphne comes out in a robe and curlers on her hair, acting like she's Vincent Van Gogh's wife. And she's like, how dare you marry someone else? I'm your wife. We've got kids at home. And then, I swear to God this is true, Scooby and Shaggy come out dressed as babies and they're like, wow, we're babies. And Shaggy is a grown, like 6 foot tall baby. And it's so upsetting.
Yeah.
A lot
of upsetting costumes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you could have done it without the babies. You could have just done the bit.
Yeah. But you could just did the nagging wife. Like, you know.
Yeah.
She's fucking Andy Cap's wife or something.
it couldn't be more of a stereotype of like she didn't have a bread roller in her hand, but she should have. That's like the only thing she didn't have. And they were trying to run out the clock because like she had until midnight to kiss him.
Yeah.
And then he would go out of a spell and then he's like, oh, you.
That's another thing. There's several episodes here where they just have to bide their time.
Like, yeah.
Wait till like sunrise.
yeah there is a bunch of like that because this show really throws every kind of like supernatural thing at on the screen.
They go to space.
You know, I was thinking to myself while watching this, you know, as a franchise, does Scooby-Doo hold up, right? And you know, it's been a very long time since I watched the original show, Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? And I don't know if it holds up, but I think there's something else here. It's almost like what's valuable about Scooby-Doo is more than the narrative. It's like the vibes, right? Yeah. Like every spooky kid, every Halloween kid, you know, every kid that was like, oh, McDonald's has got the new Boo Buckets out. They were also Scooby-Doo kids. And, you know, you loved the background paintings from all the shows had amazing. Hanna-Barbera in general always had, they had very cheap animation, but the backgrounds were always beautiful paintings.
Yeah.
You loved all the spooky stuff and the spider webs and the costumes and stuff. And that's where the value is. Almost like the way Peanuts as a brand or Snoopy as a brand has a value, a commercial value, even for people that have never read a Peanuts comic or seen a Peanuts special. Like, oh, that's Peanuts. And, you know, I don't know if I'm saying, I don't know if I'm sounding critical or dismissive of Scooby-Doo, but I do feel like the value is in its aesthetic.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. Like, there's value in, I think, it, like, not everything has to be the most well-put-together package, because people often knock Hanna-Barbera for, like, oh, yeah, they cheap out on animation. But it's like, yeah, but the things they highlight are done really well.
Amazing color in Hanna-Barbera. You know, not great writing, but very gag-oriented writing. Gag, gag, gag. Yeah. Amazing one-off characters from, like, the Great Gazoo to, you know, whatever, or any of the various robots you see in the Jetsons. Mm-hmm. Great background animation. Great initial design work, right? Yeah. Like, cheap animation, sure. But then again, all TV is cheap animation, right? But great design work. I mean, from, like, you know, think about it all. Like, from Scooby-Doo to Fred, to Jetsons to, you know, any. It's all, you know, you know... If I showed you silhouettes of Hanna-Barbera characters,
oh, you'd name them in, and
you'd be like, "Yeah, that's that." Exactly. So Hanna-Barbera, I think. Well, you know, I think what happens is people have a conversation about animation, and they'll go, "What do you think, Disney or Warner Brothers, or sometimes they say Mickey or Bugs Bunny," and then, you know, when you think in that way, Hanna-Barbera is like coming up the rear, but Hanna-Barbera is really not. It's a totally different thing. Like, Hanna-Barbera is more, you should more compare it to things like Ruby Spears or like Filmation. You know, they're TV. Mm-hmm. It's TV production. Even though they've been, you know, movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Total side note, how do you feel about the James Gunn live action movie?
I'm fairly indifferent to it.
Okay.
I saw the first one when it came out, and I was like, I'm picking up what they're putting down. Like, yeah. It's a typical James Gunn. It's if you
well, that
had
was before we
director,
knew what typical James Gunn meant.
Yes, but yes, looking backwards, it's typical James Gunn. And I guess, again, in retrospect, if you were going to pick a guy to do a Scooby-Doo movie, I guess he would be at the top of your list. Like, he does. I give him a lot of credit for doing the thing that I appreciate, which is he understands that it's a cartoon. And in the wrong hands, it could have been like a very different, way, way more like earth-toned version of Scooby-Doo. His version of Scooby-Doo was very like colorful and self-referential. Yeah. Matthew Lillard is still playing Shaggy in the cartoon.
Yeah, he became like the official Shaggy.
Yeah.
I'm kind of indifferent to it now, but I gotta be honest, when I first saw it, I hated it because I was such a Scooby-Doo purist. And spoiler alert, in that movie, the villain, like when they take the villain's mask off, it's Scrappy, which I get. Even now, I'm like, I get the idea
yeah,
of it
like
if it's
not
an SNL
Scrappy
sketch.
Fan. Yeah, like even if it's not Scrappy, even if you don't like Scrappy, it's a weird thing for them to be like, ha, see, like, because the fans all hate this character, so now we're making him the villain. It's like, it feels like you've got like some weird vendetta that you put in there in place of just having an actual villain.
Yeah, it's also weird for me when you've got a franchise that, first of all, there's no Scooby-Doo continuity. I mean, there's no continuity to speak of. They're kind of, sometimes they age, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's a couple together, sometimes it's not. Sometimes they're Scrappy. The origin of Scooby is a million different things. The origin of how they get together is a million different things. Sometimes they're teenagers the whole way through. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes with the Harlem Globetrotters, like, there's no continuity. So to act like there is weird, and to act like this franchise in general isn't all kind of silly. It was a weird, like, I want to call it a Rise of Skywalker. And by that, I mean going out of your way, bending over backwards to try to fix what you perceive as a problem in the narrative. Mm-hmm. That's what making the villain Scrappy does. Because it's like,
because if you came in fresh, like, we know about Scrappy.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to appeal to, like, okay, you could put in the self-referential jokes. That's stuff that, like, you're either going to get or it's going to go over your head. But to make the villain scrappy, that is for a specific section of the audience.
Right.
So now you just cut everybody else out who's probably going like, wait, so what? Like,
right. But it also makes me go, then who is this for, right? Because
right.
if you know Scrappy, I guess a lot of people don't like him, but don't you feel like if it means something to you to see Scrappy at all, doesn't that mean you kind of like him in some way? Like, yeah. I find that I had this problem when I was talking about the new Masters of Universe, because I like it a lot, but in its worst moments, it's making fun of Master Universe. Mm-hmm. But it's like no one who would get this joke wants this joke. The only people that would get this joke are people that don't care, but they don't care enough and they don't even know it. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess this is a good time to segue into, unless we have more to talk about with the actual show.
Yeah.
But I think this is a good time to segue into the movie.
Well, so it's funny that you say that, because there's a Scrappy joke in the movie. So yes. In 2019, so I don't know if you guys know this, but like from the late 90s to now, there has consistently been animated Scooby-Doo movies every couple of years.
You mean like every, like literally like every 2 years?
Yeah, straight to DVD animated movies. Like with, like, you, I think sometimes they play them on Cartoon Network, but they're just, you know, these aren't theatrical films, but they've been constantly making them. And in 2019, they made one called Scooby-Doo and the Curse of the 13th Ghost, which is based on this premise of, like, you know, they really didn't catch 12 ghosts. It's really not clear in the show, but it's going off this idea of, like, oh, they didn't catch all 13 and there's one left and they never caught the one, the last one.
Yeah.
And they begin, in the beginning, it's the original team, near all of them, and they're having a garage sale and they're trying to sell, somebody's like, oh, what's this crystal ball? And then just Shaggy and Daphne are like, oh, well. And then it's a lot of like, oh, remember that summer where you guys went to camp? Well, we met Vincent Van Gool. It's a whole, it makes no continuity sense because I read them as older in 13 Ghosts, but in this it makes it like it was just one summer in their young life. And of course, Maurice LaMarche is doing the voice of Vincent Van Gool now, just amazing doing an impression.
Job. He actually does an amazing job.
Yeah. Well, Maurice LaMarche, you know him as the Brain from Pinky and the Brain. Egon from Ghostbusters. He's a great, he does a great Orson Welles. I think is he the voice of Orson Welles in Ed Wood? I think he is.
I think so.
I think it's played by Vincent D'Onofrio, but voiced by Maurice LaMarche.
Yeah, he does that. It pops up a lot. Like, he does that in The Critic, too. He plays Orson
Welles. Yes. He's, yeah, right. They're not supposed to crawl. So it's, I watched it the other night. It was entertaining. Actually, if you like the show, one of the coolest parts is the opening credits kind of do a, kind of show you.
Like a recap kind of in silhouette.
Yeah. But anyway, just before we talk about it, at the very end, we meet Flim Flam as an adult in this, and he's not as annoying. And at the end, they're like, oh, it's great to have us all together. And Flim Flam was like, yeah, except Scrappy. And then the other teammates go, what's Scrappy?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like the James Gunn joke. Like, what the fuck? This is the dumbest shit ever. It's so weird to be like, this thing is too dumb. But it's like, is it? Look in the mirror. This is the dumbest shit ever. Like, why? And I say that with total love. I say that with love. You know what I mean? It's weird, right? Yeah. And that movie,
and
also,
plenty of callbacks in that, like Shaggy flying a plane. Like, there's a lot in there.
Right, and Freddy's like, why is he flying the plane? There's a lot of fun. You're right, and then there's a subplot of Fred being jealous of Daphne because she was the leader while he was gone, and she's so capable without him. And I think a fun subplot of Velma being like the skeptic and be like, no, there's no such thing as ghosts. You guys are being fooled.
You basically, like, the air in the Himalayas, like, caused you to hallucinate ghosts.
Right. But the weird thing that the movie does is the 13th ghost ends up being it's a guy in a mask and illusions. Yeah. And it wasn't really the 13th ghost. But then they do one thing where they're like, oh, the 13th ghost is really there, but he's good. He's your guardian angel.
Yeah.
And then no, at the
I
end,
repent.
Right. And then at the very end, Velma's like, no, that's not true. It's weird that it tries to both fence it.
Yeah. It tries to make it like, oh, well, this isn't The Sopranos. You don't need to have, like, a fucking
right.
open
don't,
ending.
You don't need to make it open to interpretation. Like, again, it's like the Scrappy thing. Like, and there's no continuity. Why do you feel it's necessary to walk back that they were ever real ghosts? Especially because if you watch the 13 ghosts, like, there's magic fucking everywhere. There's little magical creatures in the forest. Like, it's you can't hand wave all that away. Anyway, look, I do want to talk about my favorite episode, if that's okay.
Yes.
My favorite episode is, where was it? Episode 5, That's Monstertainment. This is the one where they go into a movie, and it's yes. Awesome. So that we see that the gang actually lives together in like a big old house. Again, who funds this? I would love, like, what you need is this to be like some creepy old, like, hedge fund manager who's like fucking Daphne. Like, he just funds everything. Like, he's just the daddy, the sugar daddy. Anyway, they're sitting on a couch eating popcorn and watching Spine Tingler Theater in the middle of the night. Cozy as hell. Mm-hmm. So cozy. Who doesn't want to stay up with their friends and watch scary movies in the middle of the night? Okay.
So here's the thing with that where it became, and they do this several times, and I thought it was fucking hilarious in an inadvertent way. They made such a big deal in the first episode about, oh shit, like, you got to catch these ghosts.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't get these ghosts, like, the whole planet is fucked.
This is a plague on humanity.
But then there's several points where it's like, ah, let's just hang out and watch a movie. And, like, Vincent Van Gogh's like, don't forget me. And, like,
yeah,
he jumps in watching a movie. He's in the ball, and then he appears. He's like, I'll bring the soda pop.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really funny. Like, when in the first episode, you kind of feel like, oh, he's just going to be on the crystal ball. But he's, like,
they do
there.
That in the second episode, too.
He's in the gang. The ball. What if Vincent Price was like, you know, I really like this show. And they're like, oh, we'll write you in more. I guess you really.
Yeah,
how about an episode where I have a girlfriend and I go to marry her? Yeah, sure. All right. That could be an episode. Why not? And she's beautiful and she wants to kiss me and drain me. All right. Well,
all right, do we have to put that language in there? It's in my contract.
Okay. We don't got
to
say drain. So in this, there's the monster's name is Zomba, and she's really cool looking. She is like, she's got like purple hair and like red skin. She has like weird yellow teeth and she really looks like a real Ghostbusters monster. She has like bone earrings, and she sucks them into the movie. And again, very meta. The name of the movie they're watching is, what is it? It's The Son of the Bride.
The Son of the Bride of the, it's like a big long, like, play on Bride of Frank, like the son or bride of Frankenstein.
Right. The son of the bride of the ghost of Frankenstein or something like that. Yeah, the son of the bride of the ghost of Frankenstein. And it looks like a Universal Monster movie.
And they're in it.
So she sucks them. There's a lot of people being sucked into things in this show, by the way. And so she sucks them into the TV because she wants to distract them so she can steal the demon chest, which where the demon chest is Scooby has his own room with wallpaper with bones on it.
Yeah.
And he has an American Gothic painting where both farmers look like Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. He's basically got a panic room.
Yeah. And behind that is like a safe where he puts it. And then there's like lasers and all sorts of so she's trying to get through that to get to the demon chest, but they're stuck in a movie. And again, this is like what happens with the comic episode, which we can talk about later. They're in the movie and they're like, well, we have to play the roles it's very similar to, you know, a classic we recently talked about in the show, Waxwork 2. They're like Scooby is Dr. Frankenstein and Scrappy is E-Gad, Igor. And Daphne is the bride. And, you know, I bet there was at least one executive who was like, we can't have whole minutes of this thing in black and white. Kids don't like black and white. But it's in black and white.
Yeah.
like they're in black and white when the entire time they're in black and white, and it's pretty fucking awesome. Oh, there's also a fun bit where when the movie starts after they've been sucked in, you see like the MGM logo, but it's Scooby in it.
Yeah, it's Scooby in the logo.
Yeah, and it says Rana Rarera, like Hanna-Barbera. Like I love it. I love how much fun they're having. They use lightning to like heat up the crystal ball, and that brings them back into reality. Something, something. They always catch the ghost at the end and open up the trunk, and the ghost goes in, and they close it. And yeah, that's another one we got.
Sometimes the ghost is like kind of like willingly, like in one of the later episodes, the ghost turns back into a bat, and they just have the chest open, and the bat just like flies into it.
Yes.
It's like, why
fly away?
I mean, I get they got you, but like, yeah, you don't have to go so willingly. Like,
right. Well, it's the rules.
All right,
you guys got me. I better go in here. Norm Macdonald is a bat. Well, you know, I better fly in there. You know, yeah, you know, the guy caught me. What are you gonna do? So this, I mean, they're very similar, but this and the comic episode are probably like two of the most unique. Right? We talked about a little bit.
Platypus Man, not to be confused with Richard Jenny.
Yes, not to be confused with Richard Jenny. They go into a comic strip. I forget the monster in this. The monster's like, yeah, I have the power to, I have like, it's basically the plot of Bendy and the Ink Machine. He has magic ink where things could come out of what you draw. There's also a Tales from the Crypt like this, and things can go into it. And again, they're sucked in, but they're in different things. So
they keep going from like panel to panel, like it transitions to like different comic panels.
Right. They're in like Platypus Man, and he sings like a little song. And what's really cool is like the background looks very sketchy, and there's ink errors where the ink will bleed out from the black line. Mm-hmm. It's like really doing something aesthetically. But then the ghost is in like a sci-fi comic where it looks totally different. It looks like Flash mm-hmm. Gordon. And then they find a wizard come. At one point, they're like, they go to the ground and they saw through the ground, and then you see they're like actually breaking through the box, the comic panel.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's legitimately Deadpool shit. It's awesome.
Wacky Wizard?
Oh, what's the wizard's name?
There was one scene where he's like, I'm the Wacky Wizard. I'm like, couldn't come up with a better name than.
No. Well, you know, that's where Hanna-Barbera.
That's where they show their cards a lot.
What is it called? Oh, it's called Scooby and Quackland. It's episode 10.
Yeah.
The villain's named Demondo, who's this furry green demon who looks a lot like Bigfoot. Yeah, Wacky Wizard. You're exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're jumping. It's pretty cool.
It reminded me a lot of the Sega Genesis game Comic Zone.
I've never played that.
Oh, you would love it. It's basically, it's like a beat-em-up game, but you're going through comic panels. And like sometimes, a lot of times on the screen, like multiple comic panels on the same screen, and like it gets very meta, where like villains will sometimes be drawn in, like a big pencil will come out and draw them.
Yeah,
you can like to get to like, oh, I gotta get to the sewer, so I'm gonna your character will like break the comic panel below him and like jump into the panel underneath.
Oh, that's awesome!
Like, it's very interesting.
Well, let me ask you, as we sort of begin to wind down. Who's your favorite monster or ghost or demon?
Ooh, I'm going to get their names. Because again, a lot of these names.
These are very important questions that we deal with on PCN. Just a couple of them.
You know what? I don't even need to look this guy up because his name is actually very. Some of the names are like he's like Demonza. It's like, yeah. Oh, what? I got to look that up again. But I really like Time Slime.
Time Slime! He's like a Batman villain. Well, he looks like Mr. Freeze.
He looks like Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
He has an interesting thing with his voice. Like at first I thought there was like something wrong, and then I was like, no, they're just doing that with him. It's basically like if I'm recording right now and I unplug my headphones and like spoke into the mic,
yeah,
and like you got the feedback from it would be like I'm talking twice.
It like layers over itself.
Yeah,
it's almost like its own like it echoes, but it's also they sound different. It's like two voices talking at once. And he could play with time. He like slows down time and speeds up time. Mm-hmm. He's the one where he slows it down, and then we go. Scooby goes all the way back to his childhood, and we see him being born and shit like that.
We see a really old, shaggy, like fucking.
Yes. Crazy, yeah. Oh, right. They go to like in the future. It's Mad Max.
Yeah, in the future, they go to, like, the place that Mr. Manhattan goes to in Watchmen to cool down.
Okay, now I remember this episode. This episode's called It's a Wonderful Scoob. And when I first heard that, I was like, oh, this is going to be a Christmas episode. Nope. But it's not. What it is it's like It's a Wonderful Life, where it's like, here's what the world would be like without you, Scooby.
Yeah, this Which is maybe funny. My favorite episode. Because it's got, of all the episodes, like, this got very meta.
Oh, like, for
Scooby's
sure.
Like, I'm fucking out of here.
Right. Quitting is funny. After all of this, he's like, you know what? I'm done. Fuck this. What's funny to me, and again, why even pull at this thread? Like, Scooby's not the one who wins out the day every day. Like, every time, it's not like he wins at the end of every episode. So it's weird that they're like, if you weren't born Scooby, the world would be a Mad Max hellscape. It's like, how did Scooby stop that from happening? My favorite monster is Rancor. Not the Rancor from Return of the Jedi. He's a vampire, but he looks like the devil. He's a very scary looking. So imagine, like, he's like a Batman, not Batman,
but
Batman.
Not Batman. Yeah, but Batman.
More like Man Bat, if anything.
More like Man Bat. Yeah.
He's got a bat head and he's dressed like Dracula, but his head is red and his cape is red. So he also looks very devilish. And I think he also has hooves and he's a. Mm-hmm. He's a vampire. He's just very scary looking. He's just a really cool design. I think he's my favorite of the 13 ghosts, or 12, or how many we actually really see.
Favorite name, though? The Reflector Spectre.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's the one in Morocco, right? Because it's in a...
Yes. The mirror, they jump in the mirror. And
Bogle and Weird have to, like, carry the mirror around. What about this... At one point, there's an episode where there are three witches that are clearly based on the Three Stooges.
The Three Stooges?
I guess the last thing we should talk about is the last episode, because the last episode feels like it's trying to be an homage to the original series, because it's got a mystery in it and clues, and there's someone behind it.
Villain, yeah, like there is a demon, but like the demon isn't really like...
The main menace.
The main menace is this fucking, like, my reference point is Dean Cain, because he hosted it in the 90s. But, like, it's like Ripley's Believe It or Not host.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I've got, first off, why are they on this show?
Oh, right. They go on a public access show hosted by, what's his name?
Boris.
Creepoff? It's supposed to be like Boris Karloff.
Yeah.
And they're going, I guess, to... Say that they're looking for the 13 go. I don't know, man. And he's an old friend of Vincent, of course.
Yeah, that was another thing where I thought, like, or I was like, oh, did I miss something at the beginning? Like, and I was like, no, they really, like, they don't really have a good reason for being, like, okay, whatever, they're on TV, I like that. But it's like, you fucking idiots, why are you letting anyone else touch this fucking trunk?
Right, but it's so interesting, again, like, that a show at this time, because this is a Saturday morning show. Yeah. It's on ABC, that they're like, let's homage the original series. Because, like, there's a lot of Scooby snacks in it, which aren't really in every episode. Yeah. There's a lot of, even in the end, they're like, oh, this is what happened. When the light went off, the table turned.
Yeah.
Like, it really is like, you're trying to homage the original series. So I can't get a good read on this. I think that they wanted, I don't think this was a miniseries. I think that they wanted to go on, and it got canceled.
If it was a miniseries, they would have caught all 13 ghosts. Like, that's always been my contention. And again, to your point, in that last episode, they do open the chest.
Yes.
So you think, like, oh, well, like, you see, like, three ghosts come out, but I'm assuming it's supposed to represent, like, all the ghosts coming out. And I thought, like, oh, like, does it end on a cliffhanger? Like, are they gonna, is this how, like, the ghosts are freed again? We're gonna get, like, another season? Or they hope to, and it's like, nah, they again, Flim Flam comes in because he found a vacuum.
Right. Yeah, by the way, fucking Luigi's Mansion completely stole that.
Yeah.
It's called the Vacuum Spook, and it's just, it's exactly what Luigi has. Which, by the way, those games are incredible.
They are.
It's a vacuum that sucks up ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
This is, look, is it fucking Shakespeare? No. Right?
No, but if you're a fan of Scooby-Doo, and...
Yeah.
You either never watched this, or this is your first time even hearing about it. You should look it up and go watch it.
It's definitely an oddity within the Scooby-Doo canon that deserves to be looked at, because it's got stellar animation. It's got stellar comedy. It's got good writing.
Vincent Price got.
It's got Vincent Van Gool.
He's one of the best parts. Like, he really, like, hams it up. I like, because in the first episode, you kind of get the impression that, like, oh, he's going to be the guy that's, like, playing the straight man. And, like, I'm helping you, but I'm upset at you for unleashing the ghost. But, like, and there is a fair bit of that. But right. He's, like, way more genial to them than I would have expected.
Yeah, he's just part of the gang.
Yeah, very quickly he just becomes part of it. Again, like, the second episode, okay, he's in the ball. He's doing what you think he's going to be doing. But then, like, by episode 3 or 4, he's, like, just, like we said before, he's just hanging out with them, eating 4 pounds of popcorn and soda pop.
Well, he could teleport anywhere. He could just be there. Like, the writing is very easy. Whatever they need him to do in that episode, he could do.
Oh, yeah, because, again, they set up that, oh, I'm going to help you by communicating through this ball. But then in, like, the very next episode, he's like, oh, I'll do it myself. And, like, just fucking flies on his magic carpet.
Yes. Yes. Oh, it's so good. How are you not convinced yet? Turn off this podcast and go watch it. It's all
what
for
free. What do I got to do to convince you?
Yeah. It's all for free, I think, on Dailymotion. If you want to pay way too much for it on Amazon, you can. Yeah, it's like $23 on Amazon.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, and the next show after this is Pup Named Scooby-Doo. So this is like the proto of that, and that was a totally different direction, really.
Oh, yeah, that was like, the animation's like completely different. Like, as a kid, I didn't know that this was like, oh, this was in 1985, and the other shows were in the late 60s, because this, they had a style that like looked almost interchangeable. Like now, like with a more trained eye, you can kind of tell, but like, as a kid, this Scooby and Shaggy, Scooby and Scrappy Doo, and like the original series, all like, as far as my young mind was concerned, like all interchangeable.
Yes.
But it's got a
Cartoon Network would interchange them.
Yeah.
It was just like the Scooby Doo hour, and they just play whatever fucking.
Yeah, that was a big thing in the 90s where it's like, hey, we've got the rights to a lot of this stuff. So what are we going to do? Just make it now. Like, didn't Kids WB do that too with like Looney Tunes, where Sylvester and Tweety hour.
The weirdest one, and I don't know, maybe I was just dreaming this, but I swear to God this existed for a very short time. They had an hour block where they played Flintstones and Scooby-Doo, and they called it the Scooby and Dino show. I swear to God this exists.
I'm looking this up.
He's Googling it right now, folks.
Scooby.
By the way, if you say no such thing exists, I will not be surprised, but I will be saddened. Remember the Tex Avery hour? Like, they would make...
Oh, I remember Tex... Oh, yeah. Well, that was Toonheads is what you're thinking of.
Yes, yes.
It's Toonheads. They... Man, TNT, or Turner, rather, because they own Cartoon Network, really were, like, in prime benevolent mood in the 90s, because they were very big on, like, here's the history of cartoons. Here's Tex Avery. Here's why you should care about him. Here's Bob Clampett. Here's how you should care about him.
Yeah, to actually say like these are the directors of these cartoons, and we're gonna make a block of all shorts by this one Looney Tunes director, and why that's important. That's crazy. I mean, that's what Turner built the TV empire on, right? Which was like older libraries of material.
Yeah,
you got anything over there about the Scooby and Dino show?
No, there is no standalone show. It keeps giving me the Scooby-Doo and Dino-Mutt.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking about. There was also a Richie Rich and Scooby show, which was they just put together Richie Rich episodes and Scooby episodes. I don't know what the value was of doing that, but they did that a lot.
Now because it led me right to Scooby-Doo's All-Star Laugh Olympic.
Yeah. I was a big fan of that, too. That's basically just
their version of...
Oh, Avengers Endgame.
I think I maybe have an answer for you. Hold on.
Okay. Oh.
Give me one.
This is breaking news here on PCM. We break the news.
So I have a commercial. I'm gonna send this to you. It's like a minute long here. I'm gonna text this to you right now.
Oh my god, folks.
I think I found out.
Breaking the Venice commercial. I'm gonna look at it and describe it to you guys because I don't play Scooby and Dino-Mutt. Okay, that's Fred. And then the complete 50. I don't know what the hell this is. I'm seeing Bluey. This is not right.
This can't be.
You know what was really awful? Speaking of Dino-Mutt, a couple, like 2018, 2019, they made that movie Scoob. That was a like theatrical film. And it was like, they were trying to start a Hanna-Barbera cinematic universe. Oh, it was awful. Did you see that at all?
Yeah.
It was terrible.
No, I didn't see it, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, I wanted to like it, and I hated it. And
so
I think
this thing I found was basically a fucking... I hate when people do this. People do this with wrestling all the time, where you're looking up a match, and then you click on it, and the thumbnail looks like it's what you want, but then it's like someone playing the video game.
Ugh.
Like, this is the equivalent of that, where it's like someone made their own trailer. Someone made a custom trailer for the DVD releases of the Flintstones fifth season and the Scooby-Doo and Dino-Mutt complete series. Who the fuck?
Did you ever see, by the way, speaking of wrestling, did you ever see, there's a WWE meets Scooby-Doo movie.
There's two of them.
There's two of them, folks.
There are two of them.
I've only ever seen like clips or reels of like when John Cena meets Scooby.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we should do that next.
All right, guys. This has been a beautiful episode. Vin, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
We end every episode by saying,
Row, row, row.
Row, row, row.